This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. It's not your imagination. March was oddly warm. In fact, it was Earth's hottest March on record, the planet's 10th record-breaking month in a row. Joining me now to discuss what's behind these rising temperatures and the impact they're having on communities are National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Community Heat and Health Information Coordinator Morgan Szabo. Welcome, Morgan.
Thanks so much for having me today.
And World Resources Institute Director for Environmental Justice and Equity, Carla Walker. Thanks for being here, Carla.
Thank you, Lucy. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to both of you. Morgan, how are temperatures increasing in the U.S. and across the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, within the U.S. and North America as a whole, it had its 9th warmest March. And across the globe, we have regions seeing some really record-breaking March temperatures. The Caribbean had its warmest March. Africa had its warmest March. Europe had its second warmest March. And, you know, based on some of the historical temperatures, it is predicted that we're probably going to see 2024 in the top 10 warmest years globally. And that really just falls back off of the record-breaking things that we saw back in 2023, with globally seeing the warmest year on record and the U.S. experiencing its 5th warmest on record. So we're headed towards a warmer future, and we're starting to really see the impacts of that and really hoping that communities are starting to prepare for that.
Well, and in preparation for this conversation, I read that March was the planet's 10th record-breaking month for heat in a row. Number one, was I lying when I said that? Is that correct? And whether it is or not, what's causing this record heat?
Yeah, so we're definitely seeing a lot of factors that are going into this, but we know that with our greenhouse gas emissions and everything that goes into climate change as a whole, we're really just continuing this trend. And then you also have the additional factors such as El Nino in some regions. And so we're starting to see this, and we're only headed towards a hotter planet. Mm.
And worldwide, you were making a distinction between warmest in the U.S. versus warmest in other places. Could talk to us a little bit about the distinctions there.
Yeah, so with the National Centers for Environmental Information within NOAA puts out different reports, and we look at these temperatures as well as precipitation globally, as you know, during the end of the year, as well as each month. So we're really able to get an idea of how warm each month was at a global scale and also at the national scale. So like I said, for March, we saw that North America had the 9th warmest March and the 4th warmest January through March on record too. And we know that when we're seeing these warmer temperatures, especially at the time of year that we're not necessarily prepared for it, it can lead to a lot of different impacts. And even San Juan, Puerto Rico had its warmest March. So we're seeing these warmer temperatures, and especially in places that may not be prepared for it. Things like the, you know, less snowpack in some of the different regions too, that can lead to a lot of different issues throughout the year by not having that snowpack for water and such. So it's something that we're definitely concerned about, but I know that there's so many communities, not just in the US, but also globally too, that are really thinking of what can we do now to protect our citizens now and in the future.
Yeah, and we'll definitely talk about that. Morgan, you mentioned El Nino. So how much of this warming is El Nino, and how much is climate change? Is it possible to know, to kind of suss that out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'll note that I am not a expert in El Nino and not a meteorologist. So can't comment necessarily too much on how it is one or the other. But I know there are a lot of studies that are looking at how much of an effect did El Nino have, especially on the summer of 2023. So definitely something that people are looking at. But we know that climate change being a large contributing factor to this.
Yeah. Carla, what's the best way for you that in your work that you look at this information? Should we be looking at record-breaking months? Should we be looking at larger historical trends? How do you look at and analyze information like this?
I think you want to look at it overall. I mean, we're talking about, Cincinnati, we're on Cincinnati Public Radio. And if you think about what happens at the local level, there are these health impacts that you're seeing and how that how the differences of the temperature variance from various from different communities, right? So there, you know, extreme heat has been linked to a range of consequences for humans, from premature birth to low test scores, to decrease in productivity, increase of health, of heat stroke, and especially among children and the elderly. So you want to be looking and analyzing what's happening at the local level and what can be done to address some of these health consequences and really make communities more resilient to increased and expected increase in temperatures. And I think Cincinnati has really been looking at how to do that, especially what are some of the mitigation strategies that can be incorporated into their Cincinnati Green, their Green Cincinnati plan that the city and other partners are trying to implement and execute.
We're talking about the planet's rising temperatures over the past 10 months and beyond. Do you have questions about what's causing those temperatures to increase or the impact they're having on communities? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Carla, talk a little bit more about what impact these temperatures have on communities, what they're doing for to communities across the United States and specifically in the tri-state and here in Cincinnati. What are those impacts that people are really feeling?
So just recently, the CDC released new data that shows that last year's historic heat waves across the U.S. caused that record heat-related health emergencies. And so about 180 out of every 100,000 total visits were due to heat-related illnesses in 2023, compared with about 151 out of every 100,000 total visits from 2018 to 2022, right? So you're seeing this increase in emergency room visits because of heat-related illnesses. Another stat is just kind of thinking about in 2023, all of last year, all the regions across the U.S. experienced at least one day where the rate of heat-related emergency department visits reached an extreme level. And what's from my role as the U.S. Director of Environmental Justice and Equity, I'm very, very concerned and interested in how the impact and extreme impact of climate change and the effects of climate change are hitting those communities that have the least and that also are not able to respond to what's happening. And so communities that are low income and with higher populations of people of color are more likely to live in what we are calling urban heat islands, these areas that are hotter than surrounding areas. And this is actually something that Cincinnati is dealing with, right? I think in 2020, the city of Cincinnati partnered with NOAA and conducted a heat island assessment to identify the hottest areas of the city. And this is something that has been incorporated into, again, their Green Cincinnati plan and has also been studied again, right? I believe UC launched a study last year to collect temperature data in some of the city's hottest neighborhoods, right? Your Lower Price Hill, Coryville, Avondale, Winton Hills, Cumminsville, right? Just to kind of see what was going on. And these are also cities that have a less dense tree canopy because, you know, having that shade and that protection from trees can help reduce to a certain extent some of the heat and some of the hot temperatures that these communities are experiencing.
And Carla, how is the city addressing those urban heat islands? What's happening?
So for several years, the city has been kind of looking at this as a major issue of part of their Green Cincinnati plan, which is their city strategy for addressing climate change and preparing for resilient communities. And in the 2023 Green Cincinnati Plan, which was launched early last year, one of their goals is to complete 25 green infrastructure projects. These are things like increasing the tree canopy, looking at adding rooftop gardens, looking at creating bus shelters, things that would help address some of these heat issues. But they're looking at completing 25 green infrastructure projects by 2028 in what are identified in Cincinnati as extreme heat and overland flood vulnerable communities, right? And since, at the local level, Cincinnati has a pretty decent tree canopy, right? It's about 40% on average. But if you kind of dive into that, those numbers a little bit, you'll see that there are some neighborhoods that have better tree canopy than others. And so the plan is really now looking at how can each of the neighborhoods increase their tree canopy. And so that's at the local level, right? At the national level, the Biden administration has really been taking on looking at, obviously, addressing climate change more wholeheartedly and more comprehensively, and looking at making climate action a cornerstone of its policy agenda. And so they have also been looking at programs that coming from the Inflation Reduction Act or the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law to provide some critical and historical climate investments. This is also a part of some of the work that's happening nationally around heat, urban island impact, heat impacts. One of those programs is through USDA, their Urban and Community Forestry Program. It's the largest, they have one of the largest single investments of the Inflation Reduction Act to date for urban and community forest, or like adding these, adding tree canopy to neighborhoods and to communities. And last year, they made about $1 billion available to cities across the country to invest in more than 350 projects to plant and maintain trees to combat extreme heat and climate change.
Yeah. Morgan, I was going to ask you, what are some of the ways communities are working to adapt to these changes, whether it comes to urban heat island effect or other problems that these rising temperatures have? What are you all seeing across the country in terms of the way people are trying to adapt to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say, and it's a great tie-in to what Carla was talking about in the project done in Cincinnati in 2020, that back in 2017, we started mapping the urban heat islands of cities across the country and internationally. So we've been doing this work in over 80 communities. And since 2017, we've seen a lot of different outcomes from these cities. And really with that meaning, how were they able to take this data report that they get after this project ends and work with their local decision makers to start implementing solutions, and not just any old cooling solutions, but also really making sure that they're equitable too. Because as Carla was mentioning, a lot of times when we look at the heat distribution across the city, it's not equal. It's really highly impacting people who are in low income areas, especially that were historically redlined and did not have those investments that the more affluent areas did. So it really helps with that aspect. So many of the communities, and I'll note too, it's not a one size fits all solution. Every community looks different and has different populations, different geographies that they're trying to address too. But some of the different solutions we've seen to address not just the urban heat island effect, but heat in general is, as Carla mentioned again, tree planting is a big one, especially again in those areas that are hotter and had less investment in tree canopy. We've also seen some innovative cooling solutions too. So we mapped Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina back in 2021, and they saw that some of the areas that had the highest temperatures were areas with a lot of asphalt and concrete. And so they were able to quickly, the city of Raleigh was able to quickly work with its city council and get a grant to paint titanium dioxide onto the concrete and asphalt to be able to help with how people are feeling the heat so that it's not reflecting as much of it. So we're seeing a lot of this in areas of really trying to think of innovative ways to do this. In Las Vegas, Nevada, they saw that a lot of their bus shelters and bus stops were along the hottest parts of the city. So they were able to get a federal grant to put some shading structures over the bus stops to be able to give bus riders some relief while they're waiting for the bus. So we've seen a lot of different things over the years, and we just selected our new group of 2024 cities we'll be working with this year. So we're really excited to see what they're able to do with the data too. And we work with all of these cities, even after they're done, to network with each other, to learn from each other, because one thing that works really well in Chicago could work really well in Tallahassee, Florida. Mm.
You talked about this titanium alloy that some communities have painted on asphalt. Does that mean that the city of Cincinnati just passed a ban on new surface parking lots? Does that mean that that would help if you're not putting down as much asphalt? Should that help with, you know, deal with some of these problems that these increased temperatures are having, Morgan?
Yeah. So when we've looked at the reports from multiple cities, one of the bigger contributing factors to the urban heat island effect is having more asphalt and concrete. And I know for Cincinnati specifically, that was one of the contributing factors that it did find in the report. So I think by trying to limit as much of that as possible, and again, but also making sure that whatever it is being replaced by, if it's going to be taking out the asphalt and concrete and replacing it with tree canopies and green spaces or whatever, making sure that it is something that is not contributing to this effect even more.
Mm. Carla, what are lawmakers doing at the local, state, and national level to respond to these concerns?
Well, at the local level, I really want to applaud how Cincinnati is responding, right? First off, they have the Green Cincinnati Plan that has been developed and co-created by communities and with communities. So especially for those communities that are enduring the urban heat island effect, you're building into the strategies, results, or responses, and responding to the needs of the community, which I think is super incredibly important, especially for an environmental justice and environmental equity perspective. And as I mentioned before, at the national level, the Biden administration has been incorporating addressing these kinds of issues through their overall comprehensive climate action, which centers environmental justice and equity. So you're looking at, you know, not only just addressing some of what are, you know, some of the climate change impacts, but you're really looking at how to do this in a way that is not creating additional burden and harm for those in those communities that have been historically experiencing urban heat island impact. I mean, this isn't a new phenomena. We're just thankfully talking about it now and daylighting it, if you will, in the national conversation. And so I think that's quite effective at making sure that it doesn't, that's as we address climate change and climate change issues and the impacts, we're not leaving behind those and those vulnerable communities and bringing them along with us. I would also say one of the things we haven't really talked about are some of the economic impacts of what's happening here. And one of the things that we don't really think about quite often is if you're living in a community that is in an urban heat island, it takes a significant amount of energy to cool down a room or a house. So if you're in an area that experiences an urban heat island effect, you may have to pay a lot more towards energy costs. As a result, you know, you're limited with those final two resources to make some really difficult budget decisions about what you're going to cover.
Well, I've been talking with National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Community Heat and Health Information Coordinator Morgan Szabo and World Resources Institute U.S. Director for Environmental Justice and Equity Carla Walker. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.